Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Kate Northrup. Firstly, Kate, welcome and thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
I think this is what we're going to be talking about in this interview, I think is one of the hardest relationships that many of us have in our lives. And I think it's one of the hardest issues that comes up for many of us in relationship. We're going to be talking about money. And just to give people a little bit of Kate's background, as a best-selling author of Do Less and Money, A Love Story, which, by the way, I love that title because for many of us, it doesn't feel like a love story. Kate is a CEO, planner, creator, and regenerative business researcher. Kate is here to explore and share how we can be more relaxed while making the impact we were meant to. Kate created the Origin Company to help aspiring and established business owners work less while having less stress and creating more abundance. So, Kate, I think we probably should start with the elephant in the room, money. Why is money such a contentious and difficult issue, do you think, for so many people in relationships?
Money is such a difficult and contentious issue because we have been raised in a culture that has us associate our net worth with our self-worth. And we have ourselves so tied up in thinking that how much money we make is how valuable we are. And that's too much pressure and unreasonable. And I think it has the opposite impact, right? So of course we want abundance. So having a high net worth is not a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing because of the freedoms it can allow you and the impact. You know, Mother Teresa has a great quote, "It takes a checkbook to change the world." And so I'm all about earning great money. And also, ironically, the path to creating abundance is in, I believe, divorcing your self-worth from it, but working on that personal relationship with your worth. And it has this wonderful side effect of changing your financial reality. But when we do it backwards from, oh, how much money I make or how, you know, how abundant I am means how worthy I am, it blocks the money from coming to you because you're in an inherent place of lack, and starting from a place of lack does not create abundance.
Yeah. Yeah. And interestingly also where I come from in the UK, there's so much shame and like talking about money is just not something that people do. Like people are ashamed of not having money. People are also ashamed of having money. Like it's a really difficult subject for a lot of people.
Well, it's a deeply emotional subject about something that is inherently neutral. So money is neutral, and then society and, you know, toxic capitalism and the way we do business and all that has layered on, not to mention the money stories that are handed down to us from our parents, from our culture. So many people don't talk about money growing up, and then they're supposed to know how to manage it, how to make it. I come from New England, which is similar in terms of, you know, I grew up in Maine, and if you have money, you hide it. If you don't have, well, and although I will say, and I'm not sure what this is about, there's more of a pride in not having, because another layer that can happen is that we judge or talk about how people with money are greedy, are bad. And that's another surefire way to block abundance from you. Because if you're judging if there's a part of you that wants something, but you're judging the people who have it, that's not going to be available to you.
And of course, we've each got our own relationship with money and our stories and our history and our beliefs around that. We've then got the dynamics in intimate relationship. And we may well come from, sometimes you have people that come from the same backgrounds and have the kind of shared narrative, but other times you can have people, you know, one of the things that's wonderful about how society's evolved in over years is it used to be people could only really marry people in their same kind of financial kind of class and background. But these days you can have all kinds of different kind of matchups, right? That can be challenging.
That can be very challenging. And I remember, and this is, you know, it's... Yeah, I remember before I got married, I dated all kinds of people. And I remember my parents, and this is very old school of them, and I think, you know, not particularly evolved, but they said to me, you know, relationships are easier when you marry someone with a similar background. And I was like, oh, really? So we're doing that? And, in the end, I did marry someone with, you know, some things are similar, some things are different. And here's the bottom line. No matter if you grew up the same, grew up in the same area or completely different, what we have to know is that coming into our relationship, our partner has a money story. And the money story is not necessarily obvious, and it's not necessarily based on the facts. So we all have money experiences, but then we have money stories. And so there can often be a very big difference between what happened and the story we have about it. And uncovering our money stories, uncovering our money personalities is really important, especially before getting into a long-term committed relationship, you know, whether you're going to get married, whether you're going to live together. And one of the things my husband and I did before we got married was, we did this book that somebody gave us called 10 Great Dates Before You Say I Do, which is actually Christian based. We are not particularly religious, but we just, you know, rewrote it in our heads. And one of the dates was this questionnaire that you would both fill out about, and I'm sorry if you hear some children in the background, they're just...
Please don't apologize. You're probably going to hear some descend in about 20 minutes. So.
Okay, great. We've got some little screechers back there. But it really helped us to have some of the difficult conversations right up front, because what I find in my clients is they'll say, well, I've been married 2 years and my husband doesn't know that I'm in $25,000 worth of credit card debt. And I'm like, wait, that's a pretty big secret to keep. Because we think, again, you mentioned money and shame. And the reason we feel ashamed, whether we have money, don't have money, is because we have erroneously tied our worth with our finances. And so we think, oh, if this person knew this about my financial past, they wouldn't love me. This part of my financial past makes me unlovable. That's ridiculous. Right. We actually kind of dial it back and zoom out, we need to look at the story we're telling ourselves. And we need to get clear on what that story is, because that story is creating and recreating over and over again our financial reality. And what's really important is that we get clear on what the story is, both from ourselves and from our partner, so we can know, oh, that's what they're working with, so that we can write our own story together consciously instead of unconsciously carrying around a story that's usually based on who your parents were, who your grandparents were, great grandparents. I mean, now we know about the study of epigenetics and how, of course, you know, experiences are passed down through our DNA that we don't even know what they are, but our bodies react. I mean, you're the nervous system person, so you could talk all about that. But anyway, so it's complicated, but it's not insurmountable in any way. When we have those open, honest conversations, you can air out so much. And the thing is, shame cannot survive in the light. So when we talk about it, the shame kind of just disintegrates. When we're witnessed by a loving, safe person, then we realize, oh, this thing I've been carrying around for 30 years or 20 years or whatever wasn't even that bad. And I'm actually lovable with that, not in spite of that, but just that's part of me. It's part of what makes me me.
You know, one of the things that comes to mind is that a number of the interviews for this conference, one of the themes has been the importance of emotional intimacy and emotional honesty. And often when, as you just said, often when we say the things that are the hardest to say, the things we have the most shame about, actually bring us closer. They don't actually, we fear we're going to be abandoned or rejected because that's maybe the traumas we have from the past. But actually, when someone shows up in their vulnerability, unless someone's a sociopath, generally their heart opens to that person.
Yeah. And giving each other the opportunity to see those parts of ourselves is so beautiful. And you know, relationship is the hardest. Well, parenting is pretty hard too, but that's not what today is about. But, you know, relationship.
But parenting also makes money harder as well, right?
Parenting makes money harder for sure. But, you know, money issues are the biggest cause of relationships not working out. And a lot of it is just a lack of communication because at the core, we are afraid that we're not lovable given how we have done with money in the past or given whatever scenario. And so just looking at, okay, what am I telling myself? And is there a part of me that thinks I'm not lovable if this person knew this about me is gonna, it's going to really open some things up.
There's also something around the things that we don't own in our lives that we, you know, we can disown emotions and we can disown stories and things that have happened in our past. And sometimes we can hide those things. We can get away with those things, but somehow with money, there's just something that's very sort of, you can hide 25 grand of credit card debt for a while, but at some point, someone's going to come and start removing your furniture if you don't actually deal with it. And there's something that's somewhat unforgiving, right, about the reality. And people can have their habits and their behaviors, but there's only so long that one can hide those things.
Yeah, money is so fascinating as a place to look at our issues because it's either there or it's not. You know, our bodies are very forgiving. For many, many, many years, we cannot care for them and they just kind of keep working with us. Oftentimes our friends, our parents, our relationships, there's much more give and take. Money, because it's neutral and it's an inanimate object that humans invented, it is made up. So let's just start there. Right. It's completely made up. It's pretend. You know, and we run this.
And that's sort of how governments deal with it these days as well, right? They just make more of it. So, I mean, that's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story. But if you ever didn't believe that money is just made up, and then you went through 2020 and 2021, the United States printed more money in 40%. I think more money in 2020. I'm totally botching this, but it was something like 40% of the money printed in all time was printed in 2020.
Wow. I don't know about in the US and in the UK, they call it quantitative easing, but it's basically just printing money. But that's another thing.
But again, made up, you know, in the United States, we got off the gold standard in the 1970s. So it's really just blah, 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 right. And so what's so interesting to notice though, is it doesn't have these self-forgiving properties. It just, it's there. Or it's not. And so it is a wonderful mirror for how we are showing up because there is an energetic quality. You know, when people say money is just energy, I think there's a bit of spiritual bypassing there because also we need to pay the mortgage and also we need to buy groceries and we can't pay the mortgage and groceries with energy. But, right? But at the same time, because we exchange money in exchange for things that we value, right? So money is just a system that we came up for so we could trade value for value. And instead of trading, you know, a donkey for a sheep, we can now buy the sheep with coins. And then the donkey owner can go buy something else that they would like. And so that's just all money is. And because it is tied up in our human value system, which is very emotional, it is kind of just energy in a way. And so if we can increase the amount of value we're providing in the world, we often can then increase the amount of money we are earning. So I think saying money is just energy is a little glib, but there are some elements of that when we start looking in the big picture at what money actually is and zoom out from, you know, our spreadsheets or our QuickBooks or whatever.
But there's, I think what you're saying here also really is important, is that there's sometimes that spiritual bypassing thing that can happen in the, in let's say the less intelligent use of things like the law of attraction, where someone's like, I'm just going to think positive thoughts and money's going to show up. But there's something that, that money is a certain skill, right? The making of money is a skill, and the management of money and the growing of money, they're all different skills in a sense. And it, it's just like for someone to become world-class as an athlete, or someone to become world-class as a, what, you know, whatever, that there's a, there's an investment in the development of those skills. And often when it comes to money, you know, in one's personal life or money in relationship, that there's just this assumption that, oh, I'm just going to know how to do it. Like, like it's somehow like in the Matrix implanted into our brain one day. But developing those skills is really important, right?
It is really important. What also is important is that anyone can do it. So people will say, oh, that person's just good with money, or I'm just not good with money. All of us were born not even being able to talk. And we all figured, you know, most figured that out. Most figure out walking. You know, we figure out a lot of things, but it takes a lot of practice and training. And so there's nothing that we were born really knowing how to do other than breathe. And that's an unconscious, for the most part, you know, breathing is unconscious. So we've had to learn literally everything. So why would we be good at money? Why also would we be good at relationships without putting in work? I mean, the most important things, and this is, you know, on the whole educational system, the most important things in our lives, we are not taught in school. 18 years or 20, however many years we go to school, right? We're not taught the most fundamental concepts that really make or break a life. You know, how to have a hard conversation, how to set boundaries, how to identify your core skills so that you can add value to the world and make a good living, how to balance your checkbook. I mean, these things, it's really a bummer, but there are so many amazing places, like for free at the library, that you can learn how to be great with money. And I love how you identified, it's not just being great with money. There's a skill set of making money. There's a skill set of managing money. There's a skill set of growing your money. They're all different skill sets. And if we want to be in relationship, just like, you know, people say marriage takes work, being in a good relationship with your money takes work. It takes commitment. It takes an ongoing relationship. It's a relationship you'll have for your entire life. So it's not like, you know, learning to knit, where you learn to knit and then you know how to knit and then you can just knit, right? With money, it's ever evolving, ever growing, because we'll keep digging up these things of, oh, wow, I didn't know that was in there in my psyche. I didn't know that behavior was in there, or that belief was in there. And it becomes actually really fun if you allow it to be. It's this really fun exploration of our own inner landscape, and also our partner's inner landscape, if you're willing to go there. One of the things I really recommend is doing a weekly money date with yourself if you're unpartnered, or with your, ideally with your partner if you're partnered, to go into, you know, what's coming up and what's going in, what's going out, and managing it together. And that can take a while to make it fun, but it's so worth it. And the clarity you receive, and how much we clear out detritus that can fester over time. If you just do weekly 30 minutes, it's amazing. You can just clear that stuff out and open up the channels of communication and money flow.
And I guess, you know, initially, if there's been a lot of burying one's head in the sand and not dealing with that, initially that's going to be a project, right? Like, to figure all of that out. But if one does that well, there's also going to be a point where actually it's pretty simple, because you've dealt with the mess, you've got things organized. And in certainly my experience is that when money's in a mess, money causes a lot of pain. When money is well managed and money's working well, it also brings a great deal of freedom and joy. That it's not, for a lot of people, their story is only the misery of money, but there is another side to this.
There is another side to it. And I, in my early 20s, I got myself in a ton of credit card debt, and I was totally a head in the sand person for at least 5 or 6 years. I had creditors calling me. I wasn't paying attention. I just was spending money and just hoping somehow it would fall from the sky to cover it on my credit cards. And then I finally added everything up. I finally got honest because it was starting to cause so much drama and tension. I realized I couldn't just bury it anymore. And getting it all organized was painful, but I had somebody help me. And it wasn't, it's so funny when we finally do something we've been avoiding, because I got it all organized and I looked at the numbers and I had a much higher amount of debt than I thought.
But, it's often the case, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was worse than I thought. But I think about the years of energy that I spent avoiding doing what essentially probably took me 5 hours, maybe years of my life that I just like, you know, I can't say it was wasted. They were, but at the same time, there's a lot of time and energy that I could have invested other places avoiding that 5 hours that was uncomfortable. However, when I found out that the number was worse than I thought, it wasn't devastating. It was actually freeing because suddenly I wasn't wasting all this energy trying to not know the truth. Avoiding the truth is exhausting and incredibly taxing because there's a part of you that knows actually. So trying to ignore that part of you is incredibly exhausting and will lead to tremendous amounts of stress and burnout and possibly physical issues. And so I recommend just finding somebody who can hold your hand and get in there, a safe person who's loving, and get clear, because the clarity will free up your time and energy in profound ways to be able to then change the situation.
Yeah. And there's something I think also about, however bad a situation is, you only discover how bad it is once, right? And then you discovered it's that bad, but now you've got a plan. And if you're following that plan, every day is a step towards it not being as bad as it was. And certainly my experience, having early in my business life borrowed far too much money and had horrible personal debts and business debts and all of those things, was that when it came to life decisions like needing a new car or moving home, because it was just all so overwhelming, I'd often spend more than I should have done because I didn't really know where I was and I was so frustrated and I felt I deserved it. The irony was, when I eventually got out of debt and basically had a total allergic intolerance to any form of debt in any way at this point in my life, I would often choose to make decisions of things I could afford far more, but choose less because there was a whole different relationship to it. And it's really interesting how that can change.
I love that so much, because giving yourself that kind of margin is such a loving act. Giving ourselves financial breathing room is such a beautiful way to care for ourselves. You know, I talk about creating, instead of an emergency fund, I like calling it a cushion fund, because if we save for emergencies, we get emergencies. But who doesn't want like a soft place to land of a cushion? So giving ourselves in our life, like living below our means so that we are not in this pressure and struggle, is such a beautiful way. So we can actually create a relationship with our money where we're using it as a way to take beautiful care of ourselves. And that's particularly healing, especially for people who maybe had some gaps in care in their lives. And we can always, it's a way we can reparent, actually.
Yes. Yes. So in relationship, let's say someone's watching this or listening to this, and that a lot of what you're saying is resonating, perhaps a little bit too close to the bone at times, and there's a recognition that this is something that really needs some attention in their relationship, but maybe they're coupled with someone who it perhaps is not so willing to have these conversations, or perhaps it's their partner that's got their head in the sand and has got the big debts or whatever. How does one begin that conversation? How does one invite somebody to engage in this in a different way?
This is so good. Okay, so there's a couple of layers here. First of all, it is very common that we want our partner to deal with something because it's actually something that we're not totally dealing with internally. So the thing that bugs you the most about your partner, money or otherwise, just take a look at, okay, is there any part of me that is avoiding that in myself? and projecting that they need to handle that. So just make sure that you're doing your own money work first, because sometimes what will happen is when you start to upgrade your own money story and when you start to do this work, not for any reason with your partner, but just for yourself, there's a magnetic quality of like, oh, hey, what are you doing over there? So there may be that, but you need to take responsibility for your own side of the sidewalk first. And then coming at it from a place of an open heart, a place of vulnerability is absolutely the way to have that conversation. When we come to a conversation with our partner from any place of blame or thinking they're not doing it right, or thinking we know how they should be doing things, or they've been, you know, they're not doing enough, any of that they will feel and just close down. So getting to that place, and maybe it's doing a heart coherence meditation before you have this conversation, or swimming in the ocean, or looking at the clouds, doing something that's going to put you in that place of a frequency of love and of openness, so that you can come to the conversation and say like, hey, babe, here's something I really would love to work on in our relationship. Here's why it's important to me on an emotional level. Would you be up for taking this adventure with me? Would you be up for working on this with me? And can we come up with a way together to do it, as opposed to like, hey, you know, this is bad and we're in so much debt and you haven't dealt with this and da da da, and like, I have this program and we're going to do it together. That's probably not going to work, but a beautiful invitation. And you might want to think about, what is it that you know your partner really desires? What are they craving? And how can you invite them into this experience in a way that draws them closer to their desire? You know, if it's like, hey, I know you love scuba diving, and I know that that's something you've been wanting to prioritize more. And, you know, we haven't been able to go on a vacation in a long time. I would love to make that happen for you. And I love lying on the beach. So like, let's look at this together. I know we can do it. And coming from that place of positive optimism and open-heartedness, yeah, I think, as opposed to coming from your wounded place, makes a huge difference.
I think that's really important. And there's also, I want to change tack slightly, because your second book, Do Less, I think is in a sense part of the approach that also then, once we've got the money piece, we've had those difficult conversations, we've got a plan, we're on the same page, we're working together as a team. As we then start to hopefully evolve, perhaps earning more money, bringing more abundance into the relationship, the place from which we do that is also really important. So say a bit about that.
Yeah, you know, my second book, Do Less, is really about the same thing as Money, a Love Story, except it's just about your relationship with time as opposed to your relationship with money. Because another cultural idea that we've inherited is that the only way to work to make money is to have a certain amount of pain and struggle and suffering and self-sacrifice. Then in order to deserve to earn, we have to have sacrificed something that matters to us. And oftentimes that's our physical health. It's our relationship. It's our relationship with our kids. It's our, you know, creative pursuits outside of work. And I am really here to be part of changing our collective consciousness around what it means to work. I really, you know, where our culture is so screwed up when it comes to how we work. So what do we do with that on a personal level? So first of all, we need to understand that if we are in a place of feeling like we have to put in more hours and it's never enough time and we're never doing enough and there's always more to do and there's, you know, there's more things to do than there are hours in the day, we have to know that we are brainwashed to essentially be working robots of production, that our value in society has been wrapped up in our ability to produce something that's good for commerce. We are not machines. We are not factories. We are, you know, we are human beings, and our worth and our value and our identity is so much deeper and broader than how much money we can make in an hour or what we can produce and the worth of that thing. And so it's important to know that, because so many people think, what is wrong with me? Why can't I manage my time better? Why can't I get more done? There must be something wrong with me. And I just want to say, yes, of course we can all improve time management. I teach that. I love to, you know, all of those things. We can be more focused. We can have better boundaries. There's so many options. And also, there's nothing wrong with you. There is something wrong with society. And in order to shift society, we need to, of course, work on the micro level and change the way we relate to time and the change the way we relate to work. And we can all do that, no matter, you know, if you're working from home, if you are, you know, if you're working in a company, if you run your own business, we all can make these tiny little shifts that ripple out and give the next person permission. And it's not, when people hear my book title, Do Less, they're like, I can't do nothing. I have kids to feed. I have, you know, I've got to keep the lights on. I'm like, I never said do nothing.
You just said do less.
Never said that. And I did have a woman interview me about the book who said, at the beginning of the interview, she was like, you know, I was really annoyed by the title of your book and I was ready to really not like it. And I was like, okay. And she said, because I was raised by a single mom who worked three jobs. And I expected your book to be about things like hiring a housekeeper and doing things that are only available to people of a certain income level or a certain level of privilege. And she said, I was happy to read that there were literally no suggestions in Do Less that my mother could not have done.
Wow. That's cool.
And so that's really important to know that, I mean, obviously if you can hire a housekeeper, but that's not like the strategy that I am.
You're not anti-housekeepers, just to be clear.
I'm not anti-housekeeper. But there are ways that we overinflate. Again, same thing as we were talking about before. We have this idea that the amount we do equals how valuable we are. So same thing as the money, but it's not. And so we just keep doing more things, trying to fill this endless void of being lovable, which really no amount of getting things done and no amount of making money is ever going to fill that void if you're not tending to your relationship with the divine, your relationship with your body, your relationship with the people you love, your relationship with the earth and, you know, and your soul. I mean, that's like a much bigger conversation than your to-do list, but it matters so much, because when we come to our productivity, when we come to our money from a place of wholeness, the game changes. But it's also, you can't create wholeness through making more money or getting more done.
What also strikes me as you're talking is you were saying earlier that money is a thing that we invented, and as is the cultural ideas we have around work. Like, one of the things that struck me when I started employing team in the US is I remember someone saying to me, you know, in my last job, I got 9 days holiday and I want to make sure I keep those. I was like, you should know that in the UK, the minimum legal requirement is 20 days holiday a year. And most of our staff are 25 to 30. So you're getting 25 days holiday. And they were like, what? Like,
I know.
Normalize, right? They think that's a normal way to live.
And that is why it is so important that we keep in touch with people who live in different ways, so that we don't just say, well, this is just how it is. You know, I know in Canada, they get an entire year of maternity leave.
Yeah. It's nine months here. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My Canadian friends are like, wait, you get 6 weeks, 6 weeks. And it's complete insanity. So it is very important to not normalize the ridiculousness of the way that in many ways, certainly it's worse in the United States than other places. I don't know every country, but I know it's actually worse in other countries than the United States.
Japan particularly is very bad like that.
Yes, yeah. Yes. The ways that we've been indoctrinated to be automatons and work our whole lives away. Bronnie Ware wrote a beautiful book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying, where she chronicled being at the bedside of all these people on their deathbed. And one of the top 5 regrets is, I wish I hadn't worked so much. Well, you know, my granny just died last week. She was 95. She lived a beautiful life. And she was not lying in her cabin at the end of her life, wishing she had gotten more done. Mm. I promise you that. Yeah. So we really need to remember what, none of us, by the way, know what we're actually doing here, but I do know that what we're doing here is not trying to get more done.
Yeah, right. That bit we can be clear of, right?
That's not it.
So what are some of the practical things people can start with? So yeah. Someone, let's take that, the example of the lady that the whose mother's got three jobs and single parent raising kids, and it's just like, God, if I could hire a housekeeper, that would change my life, but I can't do that. What are some of the things that one can do?
So here's, I love this question because I'm very practical actually. And so we need to look at what it is that is the result that we're looking to get in our life. So for that woman, what's her primary goal is maybe to, you know, be able to make enough money to feed her kids and not go crazy in the process. Probably. Right. And
to survive, basically.
To survive. Right. It's like, yeah, basic survival, and maybe every now and again, being able to put them to bed and get in a bath for 20 minutes before she goes to bed. So what I love doing is an 80-20 analysis. So 80-20 rule says, Pareto's principle, 80% of our results come from 20% of our actions. If you look at your customer base, you know, it's always 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your customers. 80% of your headaches come from 20% of your customers. So what we need to do is actually just have an analytical look at what is it that I'm doing spent with my time, and what are the big wins that I'm after? So in any category of your life, and you could do this for your marriage, you could do this for your business, you could do this for email list growth. I mean, like, you can get as macro or micro as you want. But for her to write out, you know, the big goal, survival with a little bit of thriving, probably, right? And then write on a piece of paper, tasks on one side, and then results, big wins on the right. And so big wins, she would first write out, like, what were the moments when she felt like she was making it? What have been the biggest wins? Was like, you know, getting a better apartment, you know, getting one night away. Like, what are those things, right? And meeting, you know, having a great friend who's helping and they're supporting each other. And then on the left side, write out the tasks that we do on a daily basis. So, you know, laundry and making lunch and making dinner, but also getting really honest with ourselves and maybe doing a time audit where every hour you write down, what was it that you were doing in the last hour? Because many, many times people are like, I don't have time. And I'm like, really? Okay, great. So give me your time for the week. And oftentimes we are scrolling on our phones and zoning out. We are watching a lot of TV. We are drinking wine and sort of spacing out. You know, we are doing things that really are not contributing to the overall dream. So you got your list of tasks, you got your list of big wins, and then you draw a line from the big win to every task that was directly related to that win. And then circle the tasks that have a line drawn from them. And that is your 20% in that area of your life. And so for this woman, she may be like, okay, but laundry wasn't related to my big win, but like, I can't send my kids to school in dirty clothes. Fine. Then figure out how you can make that thing that you do need to do that's not part of your 20% easier. My friend Laura, she has two small kids. She runs a company. She has this system where she does the laundry and then she takes the laundry basket into the room. She opens all the drawers and she just throws the laundry into the proper drawer. None of it's folded because she's like, my kids are 3 and 6. No one cares. And it takes her 5 minutes as opposed to what I do, which is like obsessively fold tiny t-shirts. Not a good use of my time for the results that I'm after.
Yeah.
So we have to get a little analytical and get honest with ourselves.
I really like that, that somehow there's something, sometimes very simple, practical things that can free up a lot of time, right? And I think part of it is you've got to put that spotlight. You've got to actually take the time to analyze. Otherwise, you keep on doing what you've always done. You're always going to get what you've always got.
And we tell ourselves, just like with money, we tell ourselves a story about our time. But the story is not always based on fact. And so we have to, I really think a time audit is super important. Writing down what it is that you do over a week of time and then adding it up and seeing what the categories are. It could be sobering, but important. You know, it's like that screen time report that you get on your phone. Some weeks I'm, you know, in the past I've been horrified by it. And then over time, And over time I have worked to get that down because it was looking at me in the face saying, you know, you spent 4 hours a day on a screen or whatever. That's not how I want my life to go.
Right.
So we have to get honest with ourselves, but the honesty is so freeing, just like with our money messes.
Kate, there's so much more I'd love to ask you, but time unfortunately is finite and I realize we're running out of it. So people that want to find out more about you and your work, what's the best way to do that and what's some of what they can find?
Yeah, so you can head over to theorigincompany.co, which is the place that houses sort of all of this work. We have a guide for you to get started relieving some of the financial and time pressure in your life over at theorigincompany.co/relax. So you could check that out. We have a blog that goes live weekly on strategies for reimagining work and increasing your revenue while being more relaxed. And so those would be, and of course you can follow us on Instagram at theorigincompany.co or just my account at Kate Northrup.
Fantastic. Kate, thank you so much. This has been an important conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.